Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field with the Institute of Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us this morning. And in studio with me is our radio producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
It's a great fall day here in Atlanta, Georgia, and I hope it is as well across the country. We've got a good program lined up. The heart of this program is going to be talking about wellness and well-being. You know, our first guest today is going to be Jessica Grossmeyer, who's Vice President of Research with HERO, which is one of the country's largest employee health management associations. And Jessica's going to be talking about a current study that HERO has done that really talks about, you know, broadening the value proposition for employee health and well-being. And then following Jessica will be Jeff Pizarro with Vivere, one of the leading wellness providers. And Jeff is going to be talking about, you know, kind of the changing way of how an organization needs to really measure ROI in these programs, you know, moving from the traditional framework for measuring ROI into a new framework to really show that value return on investment. So we appreciate the two guests joining us today and look forward to having them on the program real soon. Jonathan, we're under 30 days to IHC Forum West and Private Exchange Forum out in Las Vegas coming up on November 9th through 10th. If you and our audience have not, you know, checked out the current program, we urge you to do so at www.theiHCforum.com. And we hope we can see you out there. Currently, the early bird rates are still in effect, so it's an opportunity to take advantage of the cost-effective rates. And it should be a good program out there. You know, the timing of, you know, Forum West and Private Exchange Forum is to really enable you attendees to get a real-time look in as to what's happening in open enrollment and kind of the first strategic look ahead to 2018 plan year. Plus, I'm sure there'll be a lot of buzz through our event talking about, you know, results from the election, which really will happen the day before the event opens up. Jonathan, any highlights on Forum West and Private Exchange Forum that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, well, sure. You know, busy gathering, you know, speakers together and planning these sessions a little bit more as we get close to the event. Had a great call yesterday with Mindy Pierce, who is with LifeWork Strategies. Of course, they're one of our gold sponsors, major supporter of the event, and Mindy's director there, and they're part of Adventist Healthcare. So they kind of, you know, grew out of thinking about the kind of work-life balance and total well-being for the healthcare employees there. So we talked to Will, you know, Joe Burton, CEO of Will. He's going to be in several places on the program. Julie McGovern, Vice President of Human Resources at another hospital system, and Casey Rowland, who is also with LifeWork Strategies. So, yeah, we talked yesterday about their session, and that is, you know, all about breaking the mental health stigma, which, you know, absolutely a topic that employers are paying more and more attention to. Will, of course, has their mindfulness solution. And, you know, the session is going to all be about resiliency, you know, helping your employees deal with stress in the workplace. So, you know, that's part of our CBiz track that we have talked about a number of times. CBiz and LifeWork Strategies have partnered with us to produce 5 workshops, and they're all going to be great from what it sounds like. Eddington, of course, is also going to be partnering with us there. So yeah, that would definitely be a highlight that I have been, you know, particularly paying attention to this week.
I think that, and also, you know, you talk about CBIZ, you know, we're, and LifeWorks too. We thank LifeWorks for not only their sponsorship and support of the event, but they're also sponsoring the CBIZ Eddington Awards that are going to be presented in conjunction with our annual Superstar and Innovator Awards that we announced last week. That's going to come as part of the opening reception at Forum West. So we'll really highlight some key individuals getting great work done around wellness and well-being, and certainly our Superstar and Innovators showcasing leaders like Rob Butler with Maestro Health, Kara Trout with Quantum, leading brokers like Zach Pace with CBIZ, Jerry Manning with Manning Associates, Doug Adelberg with Levitt and Touche, and some really leading benefit leaders and directors like Scott Ramsey, Vice President of Benefits at Prudential, who is receiving the Most Innovative Benefit Plan Design and Implementation Award, Brian Silva, the Chief Human Resource Officer at Fresenius Medical Care, North America. So really quality group of benefit leaders and innovators in the space is going to be recognized as part of our awards and part of the CBIZ awards. What about some of the general sessions, Jonathan, that maybe we want to highlight here?
Yeah, sure. A lot of good sessions. Of course, we'll be starting off with the state of healthcare consumerism. And, you know, we have Michael Thompson from the newly rebranded National Alliance of Healthcare Purchaser Coalitions. He will be talking about what he's hearing from his, employer members of that national organization. And we have Steve Auerbach, CEO of Allegis. They've actually, really done some fantastic research on So about how consumers feel about, shopping for healthcare, how comfortable they are with understanding their healthcare accounts, their HSAs or FSAs, and how comfortable they are using transparency tools, how comfortable they are asking their care providers, specific questions.
Then we also, we really have two, that's the opening of Forum West, and earlier that morning we have a series of general session of private exchange forum content where we'll have an opening keynote from Ron Howells, who's one of the principals of Levitt Partners, also the executive director of the private healthcare exchange coalition. Yeah, he's going to really be talking about private exchanges as a vehicle for delivery system reform. Mm-hmm. And then we'll follow with an excellent panel from a series of multi-stakeholders talking about, where are private exchanges meeting expectations, where maybe they're not, where are we going in the future? And, the panelists here are Barbara Niewick, who's the principal at PricewaterhouseCoopers, Rob Harkins, practice leader at Willis Towers Watson. Ryan Howells will also participate on this panel, and then Mark Morgan, who's the director with Cigna Guided Health Solutions. So you should be able to gain a pretty clear perspective from these stakeholders on where they see the market today, from the many conversations they're having in the market with customers, and where they see the market moving. So, check out the program for both these events at theihccforum.com. Early bird rates, we hope we see you in Las Vegas. I'd like to welcome our first guest on the program, Jessica Grossmeyer, who's Vice President of Research at HERO. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Yeah, great to have you on. Coming to us from Minneapolis today?
I actually live on the West Coast. I live in California, though Hero is based in Minneapolis.
So you're coming to us from a little nicer weather out there, so that's great. Hey, Jessica, for our audience, they may not know Hero. Give a little background on Hero, and then we'll kind of jump into this study you guys have done.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So Hero is a nonprofit organization. We've been around for quite a few years, and what we really do is we're dedicated to identifying and sharing best practices in the field of workplace health and well-being. And the goal is to improve the health and well-being of workers as well as their spouses, dependents, and retirees. And so we create and disseminate research, policy, leadership, and strategy to advance workplace health and well-being. And we are a member-based, member-driven organization.
You guys did some really great work, and you had a really nice event here in Atlanta recently. Sorry I missed you. I was down there for a while, but sorry I missed you down there. You've recently conducted a study. I mean, you do a series of studies, but one specific study really talks about, you know, broadening the value proposition for employee health and well-being. I mean, talk a little bit, Jessica, about why you did this study, and then let's talk about some of the results.
Sure. Thank you. So, you know, there is already a substantial body of evidence that links employee health to outcomes like absence, worker productivity, and healthcare costs. And so we were looking to fill a gap. We wanted to address outcomes that we felt were more closely connected to financial performance for business leaders. And cost containment is an important thing for businesses. We do need to contain costs in order to influence profitability. But at the end of the day, a lot of executive business leaders, including the CFO, are more focused on revenue generation than they are on containing costs. So with this study, what we were hoping to do is support the strategic business relevance of investing in worker health and well-being. And then in the way of additional context, we were interested in expanding on a study that was published several years ago. It was a study where the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, they got this Corporate Health Achievement Award that they award to companies that are doing exemplary things to integrate health and safety to advance worker health and well-being. And they did a study that showed that people who had been recognized with their award had better stock performance, financial performance, when compared to the S&P 500. And so Hero has been in conversations with the researchers that conducted that study. And when we learned that they were going to be embarking on an expansion of that work, we said, you know what, let's leverage that effort and test a similar approach, but use a different method to identify companies that we feel significantly invest in health and well-being.
So this was a survey specifically to those companies that you identified as making that investment. How did you go about that? How did you identify the right employers?
Yeah, so Hero has the Hero Scorecard, which is a free online inventory of practices and policies that employers use to support the health and well-being of their employees. And just to give you a little bit more, and your listeners, a little bit more information on the Hero Scorecard, it is divided into six sections that address practices and policies that are related to things like strategic planning for your health and well-being program, how to demonstrate organizational support for employee health and well-being, the kinds of programs that you're using, the integration of those programs with other initiatives in the organization, how do you promote participation in programs, things like incentives and communications, and then use of measurement and evaluation strategies. So the scorecard is an inventory of all of these different practices, and then companies who complete it receive points for each of the practices that they say they implement, and the more practices they use, the higher their score. So what we did with this study is we wanted to take companies that were doing above and beyond what most employers are doing. The maximum score that can be achieved is 200 points. And based on previously published research on the Hero Scorecard, we selected a score of 125 points as being an indicator that those companies are doing exemplary work to invest in their health, the health and well-being of their employees. And then from that group, we identified the publicly traded companies to include in this study.
Okay. So the diversity was, you know, you had a mixture of privately held and public companies. What about the diversity and the type of industry that they serve? What was kind of the mix?
So the companies that complete the HERO scorecard are very diverse. For this particular study, we were only able to use publicly traded companies. And so that resulted in a group of about 45 publicly traded companies that also had high scores on the HERO scorecard. And I can't share the names of those 45 companies, but I can share a bit of information about them. They did range in size. So the smallest employer in our study had 762 employees, so pretty relatively smaller in organization, but then the largest had more than 270,000 employees. So we've got smaller and jumbo. The average employee age was pretty typical for a lot of companies we see. It was about 43 years on average of age, and employees were male. But in terms of the industry representation that you asked about, the largest sector that was represented amongst this group of 45 companies was in what we call the consumer discretionary category. That means they make things that people buy that are considered discretionary purchases, such as luxury cars. The next largest industry category was industrial, followed by healthcare, and then information technology. And if you look at the study, we actually had quite a few industry groups represented.
That's very good. So taking a look at these high-scoring employers, what do they do with their health and well-being efforts? They may be different from, you know, other companies not in that group.
Yes, I think the biggest differences between those companies who were included in the study because they had a high score and those who were not included because they had a lower score on the HERO scorecard were in three main areas. That they had very comprehensive programs that they were delivering, that their leadership and organizational support for programs was quite strong, and that they used data to inform program improvements. And I'd like to give you just a little bit more specifics because those are pretty broad categories. And your listeners might be interested in knowing, you know, what are the more specific, tangible things these companies were doing. So in the area of programs, we found that the companies in this group were more likely to conduct an assessment of employee health needs within the past 2 years, and that could be through health assessment or on-site biometric screening. They were more likely to offer on-site or near-site preventive health screenings to their employees and to offer consumer medical decision support. And they also use, and I think this is really an important distinguisher of exemplary programs, they use a population-based approach to address a broad range of employee health needs, which includes programs that help people manage their chronic conditions, also help people who are at risk, don't yet have chronic conditions, but help them improve their health behaviors so they prevent them. And they also offer programs for healthy employees to maintain their current health status. Even more important, I think, or just as important as having those exemplary programs in place, the higher scoring companies are also more likely to involve their senior leaders. Now, we've been hearing at pretty much every conference that we've attended in the past year how important it is to get leaders involved in programs and to demonstrate support for their employees in this area. But it's hard to actually make that tangible. And so in the HERO scorecard, we were able to identify these very specific practices that these high-scoring companies were more likely to have corporate vision and mission statements that support a healthy workplace culture, and they have supportive company policies such as allowing employees to participate during work time, provide healthy food choices at the workplace, including at meetings, and offering opportunities to be physically active, not just before and after work, but also during the work day. And then, of course, they also use data-driven strategies to evaluate their programs and constantly improve them based on employee feedback.
Yeah, so they had leaders that really were buying into the whole initiative. That's a key thing. It's your one of the outcomes. I mean, it had a true top-down, you know, buy-in to the importance of these programs and the participation in these programs.
Yep, absolutely.
So what are some other key findings that came out of the study that our listeners might find of interest?
Yeah, so as I share the results, I think it might be helpful to explain a little bit about what exactly we did to compare these high-scoring companies to the S&P 500 in terms of stock performance. So we didn't actually take money and invest it in the stock market. That would have been fun, but we didn't do that. We used financial modeling tools to conduct a simulation analysis, and we said if we had a $10,000 investment and wanted to invest it both in the S&P 500, so they get $10,000 invested there, and we invest $10,000 in this high-scoring group identified by the Hero Scorecard, let's monitor their stock performance over a six-year period and determine, based on their actual historical stock performance, how those two groups would have compared. And what we found is that the group of publicly traded companies with a high Hero Scorecard score, their stock price appreciated 235% compared with the market benchmark of the S&P 500, which improved 159%. So both groups did see their stock performance improve over time, but the Hero Scorecard group was much higher in terms of their stock appreciation.
That's very, very interesting. So how would you recommend, so when you talk about these findings and the results of this study, if I'm a mid-size or large employer out there listening to this program, you know, how can they take these findings and, you know, put it to work in their own workplaces? What would you recommend?
So this body of work is exciting, and I'm a researcher, so, you know, one of the things that would be tempting for us to say is, oh, we should invest in companies. If I have money to invest in the stock market, I should invest it in companies that invest in employee health and well-being programs. And that's a very tempting thing to say, but as a researcher, I do need to urge a little bit of caution there, because these findings are correlational, not causal. And, you know, if we wanted to actually prove that hypothesis, then what we would do is we would actually set up an experiment and we would say, okay, we're going to take a bunch of companies that have never invested in health and well-being, and we're going to randomly assign some to invest in health and well-being, some not to, and control for a bunch of other market factors that influence stock price, and then we're going to follow their stock performance over time. That's not what we did. And as you know, that would be probably pretty impossible to do. So what we can say is, if you're an organization or you work with an organization that's constantly trying to look at what are the high-performing companies doing, I want to be like them, I'm benchmarking against them, what can I do that they're also doing? Well, this study demonstrates that companies that operate effectively and perform well financially, they're investing in the health and well-being of their workers. And so if you want to emulate those high-performing companies that outperform the S&P 500, you'd invest in the health and well-being of your employees, too, and specifically the practices that they put into place. And for organizations who are saying, well, I have a health and well-being program, but I'm not sure how I should design it in a way that's effective, tools like the Hero Scorecard, and there are a lot of free tools out there, tools like the Hero Scorecard actually list out all of these different practices that leading experts in this country say, if you want an effective program, here are the very specific things we recommend you do based on the research to date and our experience. So it's like free consultation. And so this study really demonstrates that if you want to be like a high-performing company, if you want to emulate what they're doing, you can look at the practices that are listed in the Hero Scorecard, and specifically in this published study that was in the January issue of the Journal of Occupational Environmental Medicine, and it lists the very specific things that they're doing.
Yeah. That's good, Jessica. And Jessica, you know, talk just a little bit about the scorecard, because who can utilize that scorecard? Do you have to be a member of Hero to utilize that scorecard?
No, I'm so glad you asked. It is a free tool, and if you go out to www.hero-health.org and go to there's a tab called Scorecard, it'll actually take you to the Hero Scorecard. We have both a U.S. version and an international version. The international version was just released, and we have it available in English, Portuguese, and Spanish. And what you do is you just complete the scorecard, say this is what our company is doing to advance the health and well-being of our employees, and it spits out a score and tells you here's how you're doing in these areas compared to the maximum score available, and then here's how you're doing compared to the national benchmarks that we provide.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent tool, and I urge our listeners to really check it out. It's a great tool that you guys have and that you provide to the industry. Jessica, any final thoughts you want to leave our audience with, not only about this study, but about how you know your view of where you see trends in the industry too? Just leave our audience with a few takeaways and some final thoughts, if you would, please.
Yeah, I would love to share something. Thank you for inviting that. So when I consider where we've been in the value proposition for health and well-being, and I'm going to be listening, Jeff, to what you have to say in a few moments about the value proposition. You know, it is very important that we continue to hone the research, make it more rigorous, and demonstrating what works to effectively advance population-level health, because if our programs aren't making people healthier, we're not going to see any of these other outcomes emerge. But I'm also seeing employers more interested in saying, you know, there are a lot of other reasons besides absence and productivity to do these programs, and they include outcomes such as not just stock performance and financial performance, but also employee engagement with their workforce and with their work, as well as, you know, things that are downstream. If you invest in health and well-being of employees, does that also lead to other outcomes like customer satisfaction and patient outcomes with your healthcare organization? That's where I think the value proposition is moving to, and that's the new frontier for research. And I'm very excited about these emerging lines of thought that we have yet to explore.
Jessica, really enjoyed having you on the program. We'll have to have you on again real soon. We appreciate and value the work that HERO does. And again, thank you for spending time with us this morning.
Again, thanks for having me, and I'll be listening to Jeff next.
Thanks, Jessica. Take care. Yeah, they do really great work at HERO, you know, and helping kind of quantify and qualify where we are. But so, you know, as we wait for Jeff to come on the program, what's some other thoughts about, you know, Forum West and Private Exchange Forum, Jonathan, coming up soon here?
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Private Exchange Forum since we didn't really get to that much on the opening. A lot of good speakers there. You know, it's one of the few places where you can really come and get that kind of multi-stakeholder view of, you know, where these benefits delivery platforms are headed. Of course, you know, everyone has varying opinions on the viability of this technology now and in the future, and you know, what adoption will look like in, let's say, 2020. But yeah, we have some excellent speakers lined up there.
Yeah, I think we'll, you know, talking about some of those, I mean, we're going to give the broker, you know, we already talked about the multi-stakeholder view. We're going to have a very good session on brokers, discussion and innovation. And you know, where we've got Les McPherson, who's the CEO of United Benefit Advisors, Mike Sullivan, who's Chief Growth Officer at One Digital, you know, already on this panel. So we're looking forward to having them. You know, we've got a general session focusing on the consumer experience and really empowering consumers to select, you know, the right benefits. And moderating that is Sarah Matusik, who's senior analyst with Day Health Strategies, that does a lot of work in this space. And, you know, Tom Denner with Dimmer with Renaissance Dental, Will Giacona with ADP and what ADP's doing in that. An executive from Benefit Focus will be joining us on that panel as well. So, you know, good content. And then throughout the entire event, there'll be an exchange, two workshop tracks that'll be running. So you might choose to go to something on healthcare consumerism. You might choose to go something on exchanges before. But again, if you haven't checked out our program, theiaccforum.com. And as I mentioned earlier, it is our current early bird rates. You can take advantage of some cost-effective rates. Let's continue the discussion on wellness and well-being. Jeff Brezalara, who is the Chief Clinical Officer with Vivere, is on the phone with us now. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, nice to have you with us today. Appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us. Give our audience a little background, if you would, on Vivere, please.
Sure. Vivere has been around for over 14 years. We work with employers across the country, always working to try to work with them to make their culture a culture of well-being. At the same time, working with their employees either one-on-one or one-to-many, trying to help them, you know, make important behavior changes and just, you know, get a lot more out of life.
That's great, Jeff. You know, a lot of discussions all over the place about ROI. You just termed VOI, value of investment. You have a little different look at that. Let's talk about that. I mean, how do companies typically determine ROI? And let's talk about some of the issues around traditional methods and kind of your view of where you see the effective measurement of return on investment.
Right. Well, you know, ROI is here, and I don't think it's going anywhere. I think, you know, the CFO is still looking to make sure that the program is generating a financial return. However, I do think the shift is going to where there's looking at more than just that hard dollars. We're also looking at soft dollars, things that, you know, better perception of, you know, their value of work, a more positive working environment, things that can help improve the productivity of a workforce, positive attitudes. And I think, again, they're looking at more than just those hard dollars. And I think that's where this VOI has kind of come into play.
Yeah, and I think it's also very important as far as retention going forward, too, is it not? That's a very legitimate ROI, soft or hard, if you want to measure that, right?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, we come across that all the time. Clients are saying, you know, we want to recruit the best employees, we want to retain those employees. And having a, you know, valid, solid wellness program that's, you know, engaging for them and actually producing results is going to help keep those employees around.
Yep. So what are some of the differences between measuring the value of investment, VOI, or return on investment, ROI? You know, is one necessarily better than the other?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a place for both of those. I think, you know, the ROI, again, is looking at healthcare cost savings, going year over year, checking the analysis, seeing how they're changing. It's well accepted in the industry, oftentimes provides a good justification for the program, but there's some flaws. And sometimes, you know, these results can be skewed. You could have an outbreak of, you know, right now it's flu season. It's flu season hits a particular office, they might have, you know, increased doctor's visits, nothing to do with the wellness program, but it might hit their health insurance costs. And then all of a sudden it could potentially reflect poorly on the program and say, hey, you're not doing your job, when in actuality it didn't have anything to do with that. Where VOI, I think, you know, reduced absenteeism, improved job satisfaction, those things sometimes might be a little harder to measure, you know, just in terms of the hard dollars. However, you know, the bottom line productivity, the morale of the workplace, the retention numbers, those are the kind of things that, again, from an HR perspective, they're starting to realize how important those are.
As you're out there talking, you and your team are out there talking to the market, you know, your customers, you know, what is their, you know, buy-in feeling to this, you know, when you talk VOI, ROI, what do you find from them?
Right. Well, I think, you know, normally it starts out, they oftentimes get into wellness for the ROI. We're seeing this increase in spending. We've got to get a program started. But then I think once the program starts, you get in there and they're starting to realize, wow, you know, this is more than just the cost savings we're seeing for healthcare savings. It's this, you know, again, the productivity, reduced absenteeism, happier and healthier workforce. And they're starting to find that almost to be the big driving force. And so I think, again, they, you know, many companies get into it for the ROI, and then once they're in it, they're starting to feel the impact of the VOI, and that's kind of what drives the sustainment of that program year after year. And that's, you know, typically how the, you know, clients want to stay around. They want to say, we want to keep that feeling. We want to keep that positive momentum going with our workforce.
So you feel that, you know, this method of measuring, you know, value of investment is a much more accurate way to measure the overall success of your wellness program?
Yes, I mean, I think again, both are important. You know, certainly ROI. No one's gonna just not look at that. But I think, you know, when you look at the CEO who's looking at his workforce and wants to make sure that this is the workforce that's here, they're staying here, they're highly engaged, they're very motivated, they're looking at that value. And then again, you know, CFO is back on the other side saying, making sure that you can, you know, you get the ROI. And I think a well-run wellness program is going to get both. I mean, that's the great thing about it, is it's not an either or. I think you really can achieve both by, you know, having a comprehensive program that, again, is engaging. It's working with an employer to find that perfect fit for their culture, and then, you know, just maintaining and sustaining the engagement of the employees.
Jeff, that makes a lot of sense, because you're saying that you're talking to me as CFO, you're going to give me what I traditionally want to see in ROI. You're going to give me those measurements. You're going to give me that, you know, that ROI. But you're going to additionally say, here's some other ways to really measure the value of the investment that you're making in this employee health and well-being program.
Right. Correct? I mean, and again, it's encouraging them to be open to it. You know, I think we've really come down to a big shift in the last decade. It was just ROI. If we don't see the value, we can't, you know, keep the program around. But now it's like, you know, we want to see that, and we're going to get there. and I think they've, you know, come to know that the ROI may take some time, where VOI can start immediately. It could start with the introduction, the splash of the program. It can start with the health screen. It could start with one coaching session, changing those perceptions of employees, and then, again, driving that positive outlook that comes from being engaged in a health management and wellness program.
It makes a ton of sense. So when you look at that, when you're looking to provide this measurement, what sort of program elements kind of need to be in place in order to gather data on the risk factors?
Right. So it's got to be a comprehensive program. And a lot of companies want to start slow. They want to just do a health assessment. They might want to just do an online platform where it's very self-driven. But, you know, our philosophy is, you know, you really want to, if you are truly seeking ROI along with your VOI, then rolling out a fully engaged program, including, you know, the health assessments, including coaching and DM and biometric screenings and, you know, peer-to-peer challenges, employer challenges. And just really, you know, a lot of this goes back to the culture of the client. So, they, you know, we work closely with clients to make sure that this program fits their culture, is going to be looked upon by their employees as something that they want to engage in. So, you know, to really, you know, get the data needed to both show ROI and then the VOI, you know, the best situation is to have the full program, because we know DM is the best way to really drive that, you know, those hard dollars, the healthcare cost spending. The coaching can help drive, you know, lifestyle changes, which then again, hopefully improve behaviors, and then at the same time improves those health risks. Again, you're going to get to that same point where you're realizing the hard dollar savings if we can change those behaviors.
And VOI, this is more of a question and combination statement, Jeff, because you're the expert out there, but VOI to me becomes increasingly of equal importance with ROI as we add some of these elements around, you know, helping our employees and their families have a better total well-being. So when we look at things like caring, we look at things like financial wellness and those issues, I mean, that's where I think a VOI becomes even more important as part of measuring your total program, correct or incorrect?
No, you're right on. I mean, the interest in financial wellness and behavioral health, in things that aren't traditionally part of, you know, a lot of the wellness programs and even a lot of part of the benefit programs, that's really what they're looking for, because, you know, we've kind of gotten to the point where it's not just about the employee. We know that for the employee to be, you know, working at their maximum potential, things have got to be right elsewhere. So back with their family, emotionally, physically, if they, you know, if they can have all that working, and if they can find that their employer through the wellness program is thinking about that and working on these other topics that, you know, may not be getting the focus that it should be getting, then, you know, all of a sudden you're going to find your employees are going to stick around. They're going to be much more productive, and they're going to appreciate the fact that you're providing them with services and opportunities to work on some things that kind of get left, unnoticed, and just they don't have the recognition that they probably should have.
That makes a lot of sense. Jeff, leave us some final thoughts and takeaways, if you would, please.
Sure. I think we've talked about this before, and I think people are realizing wellness isn't just a nice to have. It's a business strategy for companies. And while we're, focused on the hard dollars, that's never going to go away completely. But I think we have to keep thinking about how do we improve that culture? How do we, get a higher functioning workforce, a vibrant culture again? I mean, and I think, as the trend moves to technology and mobile first and, self-driven programs, we have to be there with them. We got to be able to support that. The time, I think employees are wanting to be, they don't necessarily want to be told what to do. They just want to be able to have the tools available that when they're ready to jump in and take some action, that they have everything that they need. They've got the support, whether it's online, whether it's through a coach, that is available to them. I think that's just where we're going, that people, it's going to be more of a self-driven type of wellness. We just have to have all the resources and interesting things that they want to get into available to them when they're ready to do that.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Jeff, let our listening audience know how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. Well, you can certainly reach us at bavari.com. I mean, you can contact me directly at 972-677-1633. We welcome any questions and any interest in wellness in general or Bavari in general as well.
Yeah. Jeff, I really appreciate you having you on the program. Great discussion. Look forward to talking to you again soon. You have a great weekend.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
Thanks. And to our audience out there, a final reminder about our early bird rates. We welcome you to join us in Las Vegas at IHC Forum, Private Exchange Forum, theiaccforum.com. We appreciate your time this morning. We'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio, and have a great weekend.